This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right! They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord! It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait! There's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
I was given paranormal powers as a child.
I've hacked into just about all the information I need. They have no idea.
No more books!
You were given a power.
Others want to take this from me.
He's writing about government secrets.
I knew I loved you when I was 8 years old. All this time, I haven't been working on my next book. I've hacked into the most secret government and corporate secrets.
I'm using it to make a real difference. And I'm going to expose them all.
Should I be afraid? Should we be afraid?
I'm not ready for this!
I want to be honest with all of you. I've been hacking into government and corporate systems all over the country.
You're going to get yourself killed.
But you should be scared, because it is the truth. Act now. On your own, outside of the corporate systems and these incompetent politicians.
We're gonna get out of here, but you can't see what's about to happen.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 88. Neil Breen's Fateful Findings.
If you're a bit of, like, lost and confused in Chris's voice, because we have just experienced Neil Breen's Fateful Findings, and at one point, Chris, you turned to me and said, this is real, right? And what did you mean by that?
I felt like I was trapped in a cube.
Like,
in a tiny black cube that features prominently in this film. And we got to say, before we describe it, this was a recommendation to us by the Bristol Bad Film Club and Time and Sing, and a shout-out to those guys in the UK. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for gracing us with this thing. Where to begin?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to say, you talked about a cube, yes. So, a cube figures prominently in this movie. This black cube, which is basically a room lined with garbage bags. Yes, and indeed, it's definitely a recurring motif in this film. There's many other recurring motifs. Yes. You got the carpet. You got a black pair of pants and shoes. You've got
mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I should have been on mushrooms watching this thing. Honestly, man, like, this is a film that is like Kubrickian. It's in its obtusity, and yet. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have Stanley Kubrick, for example, 2001: A Space Odyssey. Yes, that's a film that you might not have been able to grasp it upon first viewing. It might have taken a few more viewings to understand the complexity. Mm-hmm. But Stanley Kubrick had something to say in that movie about man and society and evolution and where we've come from, where we're going, and Neil Breen, I assume, has something to say in this movie as well, and yet. I've just watched it. We just spent about an hour and 40 minutes watching this thing, and I really don't know what he was trying to say.
It's really quite hypnotic. We've got this childhood friends, mm-hmm. Leah and Dylan,
yes.
And they're running through the forest. They happen upon
a mushroom
at the base of this redwood.
It's not a forest. It's like a rock quarry, more or less. And then they find themselves in a forest with a redwood, and then they find a mushroom.
And the mushroom, it sort of morphs into this talismanic sort of brooch, which has a cube inside it.
Yes.
The Dylan takes the cube?
Yeah. Now, mind you, okay, now, you can go to, like, these, like, New Age stores, you know, these
crystals and
gems and stuff. You could buy, like, a little cheap cube of onyx for, like, I don't know, $350 or something. That's what this was. I mean, black onyx or whatever, black graphite or something, that's what it is. It's this little tiny cube, and it's some sort of, like, magical talisman that Dylan grabs.
This MacGuffin that carries... It carries through the plot throughout, despite...
Wait, you're saying there's a plot in this movie?
There indeed is. From what I could gather, to the best of my recollection. And this twosome is split up.
Well, it's amazing, because, I mean, a couple days ago I just revisited Mad Max Fury Road. I mean, what a fantastic movie that was. And one of the lines is... resonates from the movie. It's gonna be a glorious day, right? Well, in this case, it's not a glorious day. It's a magical day.
Yes.
When they find that cube, they realize it's gonna be a magical day. However, this duo is not to be together for much longer. For Leia.
Yeah, they her parents are moving, and she has to go with them. So there's this tearful goodbye, and she waves from the car. On to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
We flash forward, in the case, I guess it must be 5 decades hence.
Well, the way Neil Breen looks, 5 decades hence, but everybody...
She looks 30 years his junior, but we apparently flash forward 50 years into the future, and Dylan is married to this seemingly... I thought she was Russian, whatever it is.
She's Polish, yeah.
Yeah, and her name's Emily.
Yeah, she's a very nice, Eastern European name that is, but she's some sort of like Paulina Poroskova doppelganger.
Yeah, and Dylan is wandering around on the streets of Los Angeles, and
he's talking to his PDA, personal digital assistant, not paying attention,
mm-hmm.
and he crosses the street as he's speaking on the phone.
Yeah, and he's immediately just bowled right over by a Rolls Royce, and
as he's speaking, and this happens as he speaks to his wife, and she goes, Dylan, talk to me, Dylan, talk to me. And this is basically the sum total of
the triad motif.
Just repeating the same lines over and over again, kind of twisting the words just a wee bit, but mm-hmm. Dylan is basically roadkill on the pavement. I mean, he's just gushing blood, and he's... There's a crowd of people standing around him in a very orderly row.
Yes.
And really...
From the waist down, their denim to their shoes. And this is, again, the mushrooms, the cube, the pants, the shoes, the thing set in threes.
Yeah.
These are recurring motifs in this thing. To add to its sort of chimerical, dreamlike, hallucinatory vibe that this thing has...
They must have said, call 911 three times.
Yeah. This guy is... left for dead. He's sustained incredible head trauma. He's in the ER, and this leads to one of the most hilarious scenes in there with the attending physicians.
Well, before that, we should describe the ER. I mean, he's sitting there, and he's got, you know, half his face is swallowed in bandages, and he's got a laptop, basically, keeping him alive.
Yeah, the laptop is monitoring his vitals. I've never been in a hospital like that.
Yeah, and...
black,
it looks like he's got some sort of, like, helium...
Dell laptop.
Yeah, and then, you know, a helium tank that, like, would be used to, like, you know, fill up balloons at a children's party, provide him oxygen. And his friends are around him, his family, and his attending physician says, it's not good, but we're going to have to get the neurologist in here.
Yeah, the neurologist comes in, and a good thing, too, that her expertise was called upon, because she checks his pulse, because you need a highly trained specialist
now,
to do this.
Mind you, she doesn't use any sort of apparatus or equipment. No. She just basically feels his wrist.
Says his pulse is weak, and he's semi-conscious. Yeah, we knew that. And then the other physician says, he needs plenty of rest.
He's quiet. The dude is in a coma. And he's quiet. Okay, you're in a coma. You don't hear shit. Well, I guess some people.
Well,
say
maybe
you
if
do.
Someone came by and clanged cymbals by his ears. I don't know what that
would. That would have happened. It would have surprised me in this movie. Anyway, as she goes, he's not my patient, but I will check on him. And that basically what that means is her just going and standing by his bedside, shaking her head as if like, oh, it's not good. It's not good. Well, all of a sudden, as if by some magical
force. Yeah, these shoes appear again, and a pair of pants again, a recurring motif of black.
Yeah,
they just appear and then they disappear as readily as they appeared. Mm-hmm. And Dylan recovers.
Yes.
And in his hospital gown with his bare ass crack showing, just saunters out of the hospital and returns to his wife.
Yeah. And when he gets up, we see
this is amazing. Yeah.
Swaddled in bandages. He looks like the fucking elephant man, you know. And, you know, he goes to his home. And again, another recurring motif is carpet. We see a lot of carpet in this movie. And the carpet is, there's blood on the carpet. So.
And a lot of girls we'd like to shag, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, carpet. But,
you
know.
There you go. And, yeah, okay, anyway. And this, again, this if this sounds off kilter or not in unhinged, it is. He refuses to take his meds, goes to take a shower.
It's what I call the psycho shower.
Yeah.
Where someone is taking... So again, we just see the feet, right? The feet again.
The feet again and again
and
again.
Why I call it psycho shower is because, you know, you see the blood draining off him. It's going down the drain. And that's what psycho, with the blood going down the drain.
Yeah, and then they cut to the shower head and then back to the drain. And there's blood circling down.
And then his wife saunters into the shower and goes, Dylan, you were not supposed to be here. You're supposed to be comatose or something. And she steps into the shower fully clothed. He's naked.
Uh-huh.
And they dance.
Yeah.
I mean, they're supposed to be, like, making love, but it looks like they're dancing. And he says, help me. Why?
I'm not sure.
Because that doesn't really... That helplessness does not really figure Factor in. Further
it
in
seems
in the movie.
Like he doesn't really need much help.
No, because, I mean, you know, he's... Quickly, he resumes his work. He's a writer, mind you. He has a master's degree in computer
sciences.
Yeah,
yeah. He's a successful author.
I believe it was really implied he only wrote one book, successful book, and now they're waiting for the follow up. And he goes, "Damn master's degree in computer science, and I turn out to be a damn writer of novels."
Yes, he specifically pointed out of novels, but that's sort of a secondary focus because, as we find out through this great scene of exposition, mm-hmm. I will keep hacking into these government computers until, I forget what the rest of the speech was, until
I unearth all these secrets.
All these secrets.
And it should be said, I mean, this man has an office with about 9 laptops. Not one is ever turned on at any moment. And he's sitting there and he's just constantly saying, I'm busy, I'm working. And he's, you know, in every subsequent scene, you know, the full facial bandages go from one little piece of gauze to then all of a sudden he's fully cured, but he keeps getting these weird cluster headaches, whatever. God knows what's going on. He says, there's something inside me. And he's just typing away
while clutching this totemic, talismanic black cube.
And throwing things. All the time. He's just throwing, for example, he's got a pile of books that we assume is his book.
His, yeah.
But there's no jacket on it. There's no cover. And he just keeps throwing these books.
And throwing the laptops.
And throwing the laptops.
And spilling coffee on the laptops, which it's a Sony Vaio again, and he just keeps dropping it on the floor.
He has no respect for his technology.
No.
Meanwhile, he's seeing a psychiatrist. This is bizarre, because
he's seeing two psychiatrists.
Well, he starts with one, who is basically, his office is has a conference table.
Yeah, so they can seat like 12 people, right? And unless he has like group sessions. Yeah, and they sit like across, as like the CEO would, across from one another, like shouting distance across the table, like Monty Burns and Homer Simpson.
We should also mention that you said he stopped taking his medicine. Well, someone is taking his medicine. Who's taking his medicine? It's his wife.
Yeah, and she's hopped up on painkillers.
She's hooked on his painkillers, and she's got a job at the bank. And the bank, we never see anybody else working.
No.
We never see anybody working. We barely see him working. Even though he's always saying, I'm busy, I'm doing something. He's never working. He's just somehow doing something that, quote unquote, they have no idea. I'm going to change the world.
I'm going to change the world, yes.
And fielding calls from his, lawyer, agent, what have you? He's talking about a retainer of some sort.
Yeah, a retainer, which is not a term used in the book business. So for a guy who's apparently in the publishing business, that's the first I've heard of a retainer. I think they meant an advance, but either way, he's been sidetracked. He is hacking into computers. But as I said, this is an oddball film. This is a supernatural film, ostensibly, with elements of espionage, hacking, but also of infidelity. I was thinking like Hannah and her sisters, mm-hmm. or some Woody Allen thing.
Well, I'm going to bring up The Room because there's a lot of Room espionage.
Oh, they're okay. Yeah. I was going to say they have their best friends,
mm-hmm.
and the husband,
Amy and Jim.
Yeah, Amy and Jim. The husband, Jim, is this hard drinking guy who owns a Ferrari Testarossa and incessantly polishes it in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
He hits on this author's wife.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's not getting any from his wife himself.
No, and he also has an extremely hot
stepdaughter.
She is throwing herself at the author, inviting herself over to his pool, mm-hmm. to take topless swims, mm-hmm. in his pool and to use his bath and to take salacious, baths as she puts the moves on him. Mm. So,
to me, it was a bit of it. Almost reminded me of like Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah,
like, he's sitting there in his office looking out the window,
and there's
a hot brunette,
Phoebe Cates.
Yeah, I love Phoebe Cates.
Her top, and interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But he's like, you can't do this. You can't. You have to stop doing this. And he chastises his wife for giving a carte blanche invitation to this young girl to come over and use the pool. Again, like, this is starting to sound very convoluted, but trust me, this is a convoluted movie. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a second psychiatrist because, for reasons unexplained, he starts seeing another psychiatrist. Yeah. Now, instead of
the first psychiatrist is sort of Jungian dream expert who's got glasses on the end of his nose,
right.
and has this, for some reason, boardroom that he counsel his patients.
Right.
The second psychiatrist is this old lady.
Her office is basically in a broom closet
folding chairs, like that would be used to hit someone over the head in the WWE.
Yeah.
They're just folding chairs sitting, and she inquires about this guy's, the love of his life, which is this girl, mm-hmm. who split soon after this ridiculous mushroom tete-a-tete under this tree. And so he's still consumed with her. Now, there is a party that Jim and Amy are at this party, and along comes this statuesque blonde,
mm-hmm.
who is the neurosurgeon attending physician to when this guy was in a coma.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, she is his long-lost love.
Indeed. And how do we find that out? Because a notebook falls out of her pocket. And what is written in this notebook? I mean, whereas Dylan has been carrying this cube as a talisman for all these many years. And it wasn't 50 years. It was probably about 20. Yeah,
okay.
But he looks like...
Yeah, okay. 40 years. He was 9. She was 8. He looks 60.
Well,
so let's peg him at 50-something.
Right. But
she looks
35. The rest of the cast looks half his age,
yeah.
right? She's been carrying around this notebook saying, it's a magical day.
It is, indeed.
Before we continue on with this plot, let's
describe... It's a beautiful day, as you two sang.
Neil Breen. Let's describe this gentleman. First of all, we got to say, this man, he wrote this film. He produced this film. He directed this film. According to the credits...
He did the music.
Pretty much everything, mm-hmm. because... At the end, it says there's all these credits, like craft sources done by this, effects done by this, music done by this, and then it says, disclaimer, any company with the letter K or B in the name is fictitious. It was done by Neil Breen.
Yeah.
So I think Neil Breen did. This is a very enigmatic man. I don't know what he is. But he's... Where did he come from?
Or where is he going?
Where is he going? Well, he's made two other movies, but I mean... What does he look like? He looks like... A cross between Gary Shandling.
Yeah, and then you said comedian David Brenner with a little bit of Donald Trump hair.
And a little Richard Simmons.
And a little Christopher George, a little bit... Like,
a bizarre figure. Yeah. And you know, I said at one point to Chris, I'm like, how would you describe his acting? And you said, well... And you're trying to justify this man's acting.
I said it was inert. But I said that could be a side effect of his... being comatose and his traumatic brain injury. Right. But he's
Neil Breen is a method actor, right? So you're using that to describe this man's complete ineptitude as far as, acting.
Well, with this, love of his life now re-entering his life, he takes her to a duck pond and starts romancing her. Mm.
But,
of course he's still married.
And don't forget,
and his Russian/Polish/Slavic wife is popping pills.
And don't forget that at this very same party where they had this wonderful reunion, Jim
has been hitting on his wife,
and she rebuffs him and calls him a drunk. And later on, we see him in his garage polishing his Ferrari.
Yet again, with the same footage of the Ferrari polishing,
and his wife Amy takes it upon herself to kill him, to shoot him.
Yep.
And she makes it seem as if it's a suicide, which is patently ridiculous. for so many reasons.
Yeah, and if you're going to stage a suicide, it takes a little more than just taking a gun and placing it beside the victim. Yeah. This is for all you Law & Order SVU fans here.
Yeah.
Again, she shoots him from 20 foot away. There's no gun residue on him because he didn't touch the gun. There are no fingerprints. She didn't even... Okay, this would have been really bad, but too, she could have taken his hand and wiped his hand on the gun.
Yeah, exactly.
Just anything.
She just placed it next to him. Never mind the fact that her daughter pretty much witnessed her doing it. But she still says
it's a
suicide.
Pretty much, yeah, it's a suicide.
Of course, when Dylan sees his friend Jim expired, he goes, Dylan, how could you have committed suicide? Dylan, you committed it.
How could you have committed suicide? Yeah, three times.
Jim! Call 911! Jim! How could you have done this? Jim! I can't believe you committed suicide. I cannot believe you committed suicide. How could you have done this? How could you have committed suicide? I can't help you out of this one, Jim. With all we've been through, I can't pull you out of this one.
And again, throughout this... Okay, so this is going on, and yet we still get these repeated motifs. We get these feet. We get this Camaro... black pants and shoes just walking into frame.
Yeah, and little whiffs and of like purple, like dust.
Okay, I'm a smoker, right? Mm-hmm. But when I'm inside my house, I smoke a vapor cigarette, right? An e-cig, whatever you guys want to call it. Well, oftentimes you may even hear me puff on this podcast. When I emit my, the vapor, you get a little cloud. You just get this little cloud that would just keep coming.
These little purple expulsions wafting through the scene, each scene.
And then every so often we would get these flashbacks to these, there's this aforementioned black room, which basically was some sort of warehouse or something covered in black garbage bags.
Yeah, a naked Dylan and occasionally his girlfriend crouching a la... the doctor in Cronenberg's The Fly. Like, that's what I thought initially, too. He's crouching on one knee with his bare ass cheeks showing. And this room is clearly the mise-en-scene. This is decorated in black garbage bags.
Yeah.
Which I can only speculate is meant to represent, again, where this is just pure idle speculation on our part. This is to represent the inside of this black cube.
Exactly. This is
why, though? Like, how are the two inside the black cube? Like, they're not trapped in the cube because they are long-lost first loves who reunite, and everything should be happy. It's a wonderful day. It's a magical day. Like, what? They're not trapped at all, like, in this cube or otherwise.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
I don't know.
Meanwhile, Emily blames herself for the suicide of Jim because she rebuffed him at the party.
She pops pills.
She ends up overdosing, but it's okay because Breen or Dylan has already moved on to his long-lost love, this Laura, Leia, whatever. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, we kept at one point, it's like, how many times are they going to cut to this fucking office? He's in this office with these 9 laptops, not on. He's, again,
none plugged in, no screens showing. No
screens. Throwing books around, throwing papers around. I'm busy, I'm working, I'm gonna expose every secret.
I'm going to show the world. Yeah.
The government is going to kneel before me. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Why not? I don't know.
And what is the outcome of this Julian Assange disclosures?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Okay, before we even get there, I mean, there's like the scene of like the grown-up Leia and Dylan going back to this quarry and going back to the same mushroom and
giant redwood, yes. taking the talismanic piece of carbon, whatever the hell it was, like a piece of graphite, placing it there, And then what? Like, what?
And then he's reportedly, now he's got this, well, either before or after the chronology is lost to me now, he's got this ability to walk through walls.
Yeah. He's a ghost-like figure.
And there's this repeated motif of, like, a mirror on his wall shaking.
Yeah.
And his laptop
shaking on its own,
like the drawers opening,
a ghost in the machine,
and then we see
Sony Vaio.
We see him walking down this long hallway, and then he goes to his psychiatrist. This would be the elderly one.
She disappears.
He disappears. He's somehow in a meadow. Should I be afraid? He's talking to people. He's sleeping with Leia. He gets up. He sneaks out of bed. She wakes up. Did this happen? Did this not happen? Mm-hmm. She's got some sort of gold tassel, which is from some sort of golden tome that was at the beginning.
Yeah.
This is all symbolic. I don't get it, man. I don't understand.
Yeah.
I'm not a stupid man. I understand symbolism. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this is just, I don't get it. But this all leads to
the payoff, which we didn't see coming. And this is a movie that has wafting purple clouds of fairy dust seeping through it at any given moment, with non sequiturs
galore,
just odd shots of people's feet, random blood drippings all over the place. Mm-hmm. This we did not see coming. he's been hacking into the government computers. Mm-hmm. He holds a press conference, which is Dylan standing at a lectern with like 7 or 8 microphones on it in front of a green screened state legislature building. It's meant to be, you know, I don't know, the White House or I don't know what. And there's a whole bank of cameras set up purportedly to be the press, even though there's no members of the press.
Well, no, that's the thing.
There's just cameras.
Purportedly a crowd there. In fact, in the credits, it said crowd, and there was 4 people listed.
Yeah.
But you don't see anybody, and every time he says something, he gets this thunderous round of applause.
Again, stock applause. And at this point, again, we were just completely
flummoxed
and befuddled. After these disclosures, a bunch of penitent, apologetic.
Well, first he goes up there and he says, okay, it's, ladies and gentlemen, this country is rife with greed and fraud.
Yeah,
you know? And I mean, okay, like, you know, this is obviously something like, you know,
great revelation,
because and I'm telling you all the truths and the real truth. You have to act now, and these people that he's and he says it's all here, all
on this stick, this memory stick.
No, on the cube. It was a fucking cube.
Oh, okay. I assumed it was like a USB.
It was a cube.
I was not paying that much attention.
I was nodding off too at this point. I mean, it's very hard to follow this.
And again, the people at whom he's pointed a finger,
they're there.
These corporate one percenter types, they are there.
Yeah, politicians, businessmen.
Why are they there? Yeah, and then they are interjected into the scene in front of the state legislature, and there's scenes of them each committing suicide, some in front of the press with handguns, and some going back to their homes and slicing their wrists in the bathroom.
Yeah, or
a congresswoman gassing herself in the garage.
Yeah, and there was another one who took two pills and had an instant overdose.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that was that.
I mean, yeah. So I mean, this whole movie is leading up to this huge whistleblow.
Yeah, a la Bradley Manning, a la Julian Assange.
Because what I'm saying to you is that this Neil Breen, I mean, he's a man with a message. Okay, there are prophets, right? I mean,
yeah,
there are people we look at as prophets. Like we look back in antiquity. Who are some prophets that we, you know, Jesus Christ?
Nostradamus.
Yeah.
Marshall McLuhan, to pick a Toronto example,
Neil Breen is a prophet.
Uh-huh.
He's made this film to spread his message of God knows what the fuck he's trying to say. You know, there's a talismanic black cube somewhere hidden in a forest inside a mushroom, and inside that is all the government and secrets and this and that, and then we're going to, like, blow our fucking minds, and we're going to go out there and, you know, have like the French Revolution all of a sudden, and like, you know, tear down the bureaucracy and democracy, and go, I don't know what the hell this is.
Tear down that wall, Mr. Gorbachev.
What the
tear
fuck,
down
man?
That wall. I don't know.
Like, I don't know. This is bizarre. This movie is one non sequitur from the beginning to the end. Neil Breen is a non sequitur.
Genre hopping, mystifying, befuddling. But again, there's something to it. Like we were captivated by this thing,
mm-hmm,
for the most part. Like it lagged somewhat toward the end, but it's a gorgeous movie. Money was spent on this thing.
Gorgeous movie?
At times.
Wait, you were saying
in the mountains there's
okay,
some
yes,
beautiful
yes.
shots.
But you're also saying the mezzan scene is like a high end vivid porn production.
Yes, yes. Well, as I said, like it's a like a beautiful porno. Sort of a soft core, sort of
high-end
vivid video.
Yeah, well we're not this is not
porno.
Like,
when you compare this to some of the more inept films that we've been accustomed to subjecting ourselves to, the exteriors are out in the mountains. It's kind of a lovely movie at times. So, but that's belied by the sheer obscurantism and, you know, mystical obtuseness that flows right through this thing. We don't know what to make of it. It demands multiple viewings.
Multiple views. Which
forget
I
Rosebud and the Sleigh. Yeah, I don't know what to make of this. But again, you know, thanks to the guys out in Bristol for tipping us off. Because, yeah, I don't know whether this guy's some sort of auteur genius. I don't know. I would love to delve more into the work of Neil Breen.
Well, there are two other films which I will be watching.
Uh-huh.
And maybe I can understand more about this man. I mean, you know, maybe this is a true tour, and you have to see his entire filmography in order to really get to the core of this.
I want to say also, yeah, to get to core
wrapped in a riddle that is Neil Breen. But,
yeah, and his symbolism too. And I was also thinking when the there's one scene with the stepdaughter talking to her mom, and it's almost Bergman-esque with the two faces staring at one another in close proximity. It was. Yeah.
I think you're just in a very optimistic mood today. Man. I don't know.
We go from, 2001 to, you know, to Bergman to Hitchcock to God knows what. There's so much in this
thing.
The Fast
Times Are Kind of High?
Yeah.
No,
what is going on here?
You know what? I honestly, man, like, I'm flummoxed. I'm sort of frustrated. I'm kind of entertained. I'm very curious to learn more about this man, to see his other films, to find out what the hell he's trying to, like, what is he up to? What is he trying to accomplish? And
there is this, as you mentioned, these tassels that magically appear like mints on a pillow at a high-end hotel. Like, these tassels are, you know, the top of this weird box,
mm-hmm,
that we see in the first scene at the end of a long Kubrickian hallway.
Like,
and it's
a big book. It really
it's a
is.
Book, yeah, with tassels on top, and this keeps appearing. It appears in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
It appears in the hallway. The tassel appears on his girlfriend's pillow. Like, it keeps appearing. Things always happen in three in this movie.
Yeah, no, and there's a lot of recurring shit. Like, yeah, we see that stupid window or mirror.
Yeah,
just
shaking three times.
Things
knocked on the floor three times. Blood dripping three times. Yeah. What is this triad? This mystical triumvirate motif. What is this? What is it mean?
Yes. That's what it is. Yeah. It's the Illuminati.
Who knows? I have no idea.
Okay, so should I even dare ask what you've learned from Fateful Findings?
Whoa. I learned that if you're 8 and 9 at the beginning of a film and you flash forward to a reunification with your childhood sweetheart, you should at least pick someone or cast someone who looks physically like your contemporary, not someone who could be your daughter. As I mean, this old cacker here, we say he's in his 50s, he could be 60. The love of his life, Leia, looks 35 to 40. Mm-hmm. There's just absolutely no way they were contemporaries as kids. There's absolutely no way, no how. What did you learn?
I learned that you can hack into the most highly encrypted, computer servers and systems in this world, be it the government, be it big business, and your keystrokes look as if you're playing a game of Minecraft or something. I mean, that's what I honestly, on a laptop that's not even plugged in.
Yeah.
Star rating.
So the beguiling, the mystifying, fatal findings. What in...
You just made me do a spit take, man.
What in...
Fateful findings.
Okay, either way, what in God's name do we give this on our 1 to 5 rating scale?
See,
I don't know what to make of this thing.
As far as I'm concerned, this could be the most brilliant movie ever made, or the biggest piece of dreck ever made.
Yeah, are we missing something?
It's complete genius or it's complete madness? I don't know. You know what I mean? So it's so difficult for me to give it a star rating. As far as a movie goes,
as a movie goes, it's a 1.5.
It's a 1.5 indeed. As far as like a what the fuck you got to see this thing,
it's
like
a 5.
It's almost a 5
because we've sworn that we are tracking down everything that Neil Breen has ever done, and we are compelled to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Like this guy is unhinged. Yeah. He is some sort of mad genius auteur.
So, I guess I'll say it's a 2.5.
Okay, 2.5 overall, sure, why not? And be sure and check out our 5-star website, www.reallyawfulmovies.com. It's got a whole bunch of fun exploitation and horror reviews. Check out our podcast every week. We're part of the Crypt TV family. And please follow us on Twitter. Tweet to us and send us your...
interpretations of this movie.
Yeah, please do. We're begging you.
Yeah.
Awful_movies on Twitter, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.